It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Lots to talk about. Of course, the rumors are flying about new Mac products. We'll talk a little bit about the new head of retail and I think a tribute to Angela Arendt and how she's really improved Apple retail over the last 5 years. And there are some serious security flaws. We'll talk about those too. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 648, recorded Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. Simple is not selfish. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/macbreak. And by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. And by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business and reduce the threat of breach at lastpass.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Mac Break Weekly, assemble with Renee Ritchie leading the charge.
Andy said I'm not allowed to complain about the snow today. He had dibs on that. So I'm just going to say that I ate way too much biltong, and now I blame Alex.
Yeah. Oh, that biltong is good stuff, I tell you. Renee's
I ordered a bunch. Yep.
Alex Lindsay is in studio, so he doesn't have to face any snow, although it's unseasonably chilly here in Petaluma.
And I don't have any biltong.
And there's no biltong. Dang. Alex is with the Pixel Core, and of course, Andy and Akko. You may now complain about the snow, Andrew.
I was being jocular because I had, you know, I went out to breakfast this morning and I had to slog through over 2.5 inches, almost 2.5 inches. Had it been another inch and a half, I might not have been able to wear my sneakers walking.
It would have been
a block and a half. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Now we get the idea. You've had snow apocalypse already this year, though. Wasn't there a big East Coast storm? I think there was.
Yeah, but it missed. It just went south. It missed the whole Northeast. This is like we are so underserved by snow this season that I cannot complain about any sort of weather. We've had some really, really cold weather, but I really can't complain when people are holding their kids over their shoulders to show you how deep the snow drifts are. Then no, I'll take this.
Snow as a service. That's what we've got to work on.
Yeah, we've had ice, not snow. Our big thing this year has been ice.
Yeah, but don't say that. Facebook will buy it as a company.
So I hope you all updated iOS. I think this happened after the show last week, but you've had a few days to get to 12.1.4. That was the fix for the FaceTime group dialing bug. That's an important one. But there are also 2 iOS 0 days, which have already been exploited in the wild. This comes from Google's Project Zero, which has become very adept at discovering security flaws. They did not release the code. They do have a CVE identifier, 7286-7287. And they are, maybe I'll defer to Renee to describe how risky they are. In one, an attacker can exploit a memory corruption in iOS Foundation component via a malicious app to gain elevated privileges. You don't like to hear those words. The other impacts IOKit, another iOS core framework that handles IO data streams between hardware and software, will also give them elevated privileges. An attacker can exploit another memory corruption in this framework via a malicious app to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. When Project Zero says in the wild, does that mean there were apps in the App Store that took advantage of this flaw?
It's hard to say because just to back up, Project Zero is Google's. You know, they're very good at fuzzing their way through apps and finding all of this stuff. And if they say it's in the wild, it's possible that someone somewhere reported it. But there's, as far as I can see, we don't know, Leo. Like, there's all sorts of things. Like, Karma was reported, like, was it 2 weeks ago, which was a massive exploit used by a nation state using intelligence services to try to get at the messages of dissidents. And we have no idea what mechanics they use or what those gray boxes use. So there are exploits in the wild. We don't know what they are. And there are exploits that are discovered, and we don't know if they're the same ones. But hopefully just they patch everything, and then we can live better lives.
Needless to say, though, I mean, with that threat exploited in the wild, I would immediately update iOS, right, if you haven't already. And by the way, I didn't get any notice about it. Lisa said, oh, there's a new update this morning. I said, well, I know. She said, well, I just got the note. So
there's three things. One is the patch is only in the release version right now. If you're a developer or on the public beta, you're waiting for the 12.2 beta 3 to get that patch.
Okay.
But if you don't update or you're on the developer or public beta track, group FaceTime is still switched off for you. You have to have the patch installed in order to use group FaceTime now. So not at any risk, you're just missing out on the functionality until Apple ships that.
Right. If you are a regular, normal 12.1.3 iOS user, you might get a notification today, but it was available, what, Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, they try to stage manage the server load by letting all the eager beavers get it first. And then if they notice you don't have it yet, a couple days later, they'll let you know.
When I hear 0 day, I think it's good to be an eager beaver in this case. That means there's no time between the discovery of the exploit and its exploitation.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people are really, really big fans of not transmitting video and audio that they don't intend.
Yeah.
It's a big niche.
That's a good one. And then what I'm not clear about is, A, it looks like both of these other flaws, you have to have an app, a malicious app, and B, whether those malicious apps ever made it to the App Store, we don't know. Certainly, if they existed, they're gone now. So
it's so tough. Like, there were two YouTube videos that went live this week that said, massive exploit on iOS. Apple has to fix this now. And one was intended behavior for recovery of two-factor authentication accounts. And the second one is not an exploit. It's that, you know, like, you have to give permission to access your contents or video. But after you give that permission, some unscrupulous developers will upload your contacts or upload your video. So you got to be, it's the same as it's always been on the internet. You have to have really good hygiene, really best practices, and really be careful who and what you put on your devices.
Yeah. It seems like it's time for us to sort of almost have like an in-system alert system that says occasionally says, here are all the apps you have installed on this device, even just in the last month. Now that you've had 30 days and you're no longer either drunk or bored at 1 a.m., do you want to consider, are you still using these? And do you want to consider removing these right now? Because there's so many great reasons to remove any app that you just plain don't use.
Yeah.
Amongst them, the reasons that Renee suggests that sometimes you've heard someone has recommended something to you, you're still at lunch with them, you install it, and you're so eager to continue the conversation about this new app, you forget to see, oh, why does it want my phone ID? And before you know it, your really cool really cool weather app that uses bunnies in the ground to tell you whether it's snowing or raining is now transmitting your any information about nearby Wi-Fi hotspots to a central database that can be then sold on.
I have an alarm I set that goes off every 2 weeks, and it says check which apps have access to your Twitter. I don't use Facebook anymore, but it said Facebook, all my online accounts and all the apps that I'm installed, so that I'm reminded to go through and remove anything
every
that I'm not using.
Every 2 weeks you do that? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I should do it more, but I have to live a life.
I've trained myself to do that like every 6 months when I do the usual check the batteries and the smoke detectors thing. As a matter of fact, when I started doing that, I actually would write a note to myself and leave it inside the on a label inside the smoke detector of all the other things I want to do every 6 months. But then I didn't have to keep doing that anymore. But yeah, every now and then, there are just so many things you just need to periodically check up on to avoid trouble.
For me, my big one is I don't restore my iPhone. So I buy a new iPhone.
Yeah.
I install everything. I start from scratch, and I just put on the things that I'm using. So my big reset is
sync is so good now that you
once
can
a year, once every other year.
It's too easy to sync it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a really good point.
But I've always done that with my
OS. Install way too much stuff
with my Mac.
No, but in the old days it wouldn't sync, and you'd lose like game levels. You'd lose like a ton of stuff, so people would never do it. But now so much just syncs back that it's not as onerous anymore to start fresh.
Well, and I have to admit that my process of doing that on the Mac also is what made me really touchy about apps that aren't in the App Store, because those now become painful. Like, oh, I got to remember where the password. Yeah. I mean, where the serial code is and the install whatever. And so now pretty much if you're a small software, like, you know, not less than $100 and you're not in the App Store, I'm always like, it better be really good because now I have to manage it.
Yeah. No, that's why I think it's a great idea. Certainly every time you buy a new device, whether it's a phone or a Mac, but also every year, if you can swing it, to just make sure that your device is completely backed up and then just restore it to factory settings. And then just simply for the next couple of weeks, whenever you need an app, install the app. And then after two or three weeks, you will find that the only things that are on your Mac or on your phone are only the apps you actually use. And you're like, why is my phone suddenly really, really fast? Is this, did you get a really great performance upgrade? No, you just removed 75% of the apps you actually use. And that's Alex's point. If it weren't for my having to do that from time to time, I would not be keeping like passwords and stuff like that, registration codes someplace where I can find them. I would completely forget about them if I didn't have to do that. So there are upsides to things. I think that one of the downsides of things like iPads being so absolutely 100% reliable, or at least in my case, is that you kind of forget that there's still computers that still need some maintenance and stuff like that. Like if you have a Ferrari, you know how often you need to change the oil, and you know how often you need to address these filters, and how often you need to have something balanced. When you have a Toyota Corolla, something that's just designed to be as little to work forever on as little trouble as possible, that's the people who come into the shop after 5 years and they've got basically tar inside the gearbox because they've never, ever changed their oil.
My headlight went out yesterday and I thought I had to buy a new car. I mean, it's absolutely true.
Honestly, iOS, if you didn't install any third-party apps, and I think there are a lot of, I hear there are a lot of iPhone users that don't. Andy's metaphor would be accurate. I mean, you really don't have to do anything about it. It's the third-party apps. Yeah. And Renee, that timer is not about iOS updates. It's about going through Twitter, deleting all the attached accounts and stuff. If you didn't install third-party apps, I think you'd actually be pretty maintenance-free. I mean, let the updates run when they do.
And you know, for the most part, for me, it's
true for any computer.
I mean, well, for my iPhone, I know that, I had to lend an iPad to somebody for a show that we were doing, and we were one iPad short, and I just grabbed one of my second iPads, you know, like my older one. And it was like, I just realized I don't like, or the computer, there'd be a big thought process.
There.
No,
yeah.
I literally just opened it up and just said, reset, blow it all away.
Yeah.
And I just handed it to them, you know, fresh, you know, and it took me 3 minutes. And the fact that there's no stress over that, I mean, I'm old enough to remember that, like, the idea of resetting a computer and then coming back to it.
No, that's why I recommend Chrome OS for people who want desktop operating systems, because it's the same thing. You got to power wash and it's back to normal. And a lot of that's because we live in the cloud.
Right.
If it weren't for the cloud and the fact that the cloud knows every app you want and all the passwords and stuff, if we didn't live in the cloud, it would be a lot harder.
It was.
Yeah.
A lot harder.
Yeah. And it's also, I've been using a Chromebook really, really a lot for the past several months. And I started to experiment with a trick on my Macs and on my iPad that has worked for Chrome OS, which is, well, what if instead, given that web-based apps are so sophisticated now, like if you have Slack as a desktop app, but you also have Slack as a mobile app, but you also have Slack as the web app, what if you decide to run as much inside Safari as possible? Because
try that.
Except for the fact that every time you do that, they say, no, you want the app. you can use Reddit and Safari, but it'll constantly barrage you with, it's so much better in the app.
It's so annoying. So much better.
It is.
It's a lot more responsive.
But the big win is that I find that I'm getting much better battery life, particularly on my MacBook, because Safari is really, really arrogant in defending you against apps that want to try to steal your battery life and run processes in the background. And although iOS has certain protections that are supposed to protect apps from doing that to you anyway, sometimes it does really happen. So it's an interesting thing. Like if there are any apps that you can make that switch where it doesn't wind up annoying the hell out of you by using it in Safari, give it a try, and if you find that you like it, that's one more app you can remove from your iPad or from your iPhone, and frankly, one less piece of load that happens on your CPU and your battery.
That's actually my
I lost my credit card and my bill is so small. I lost my credit card 2 weeks ago and my bill is incredibly small this month. Now I'm reconsidering my entire life.
Ah, interesting thought. My new advice on the radio show is install as few apps as you can get away with.
Yeah.
Because everything you install adds complexity, potentially bugs, and ultimately security flaws. Every single thing, and including an antivirus, by the way. So the fewer, see if you can get it. And that's one of the beauties of the Chromebook is, in theory, everything you need is there.
And seriously, no joke. One of our marketing people was complaining that because we had a big meetup, the entire company last week, and this guy said, my MacBook is terrible. It's always hot. The battery never lasts.
Well, guess
what? I asked
him
to switch to Safari and use the web apps and not the Electron apps. Yep. And he's like, oh my God, it's completely fixed. Yep. It lasts for hours.
Oh, we're going to look back. Electron is the bane of modern computing.
Yes.
And we're going to look back. It's kind of like, what was that Adobe technology?
Air.
Oh.
Yeah.
So Electron brings essentially a full Chrome browser with every app, right? That's part of the...
Yeah.
So you're using Chrome when you're using any Electron app, Slack.
Over and over again.
And you're having multiple Chromes. And Chrome, as we know, is not great on Mac OS anyway. I think Electron is a terrible solution.
And he had Slack and Skype, and I forget the other ones, but he had like three or four of them running all the time.
So that's three or four copies of Chrome all running.
And Chrome with all of the tons of tabs.
Plus Chrome.
It's kind of a constant of the universe in terms of digital lifestyle. Any solution that makes life much easier for developers will make life much harder for users.
Good point.
Right.
Perfectly said. As long as we're talking security, there is another maybe security flaw. Security researcher Linus Hunza put up a video demonstration of what he claims is a exploit in Mojave that lets him access passwords stored in the keychain, passwords that are theoretically encrypted. But he says, I'm not going to tell Apple at a protest because the bug bounty program only applies to iOS. He wouldn't get any money for a Mac OS flaw.
Yep.
So he posted the exploit on video, but not the information about it. And he's not telling Apple. He calls
the biggest problem with this, I understand this and I feel where he's coming from. There absolutely should be a Mac bounty program. They launched the iOS bounty program and I know Apple's planning one. They've said as much. They just haven't got it out yet. And that's terrible. Like it should have come out with the iOS bug. But you know, the thing with these exploits is you never know who else has them. And he's discovered one. And yes, he's kind of holding Apple hostage, but he's also holding all of us hostage. And I'm pretty sure if he just said, I have this issue and Apple's terrible and they don't give me a bounty, sort of like what happened with the FaceTime bug, he would have gotten just as much press as anything else, and we would have gotten a fix sooner. So I feel very conflicted about the methodology he's using to get attention.
Remember, the other big problem is that in his defense, these exploits take they're almost creative works. They take time to figure out and to document and to figure out exactly what's going on here. And so bug bounties are a way for these people who are security experts to get paid for their work. And if it's not Apple that's going to pay them, there are certain government agencies and foreign agencies and private security agencies that will pay him to figure out how to get into some password's keychain, because they are the people that the police turn to, that corporate security turns to when they need to get at information that is being protected. So if Apple doesn't
agree. I just don't think they should extort us. They should shame Apple. Like what he's doing now hurts both us and Apple. And I think he should just hurt Apple is my only thing.
Yeah. I remember it was a little controversial. Apple didn't offer bug bounties for many years, only recently started the iOS plan.
Yeah.
And I understand Apple's thinking there. They didn't want to drive the price up
and create
bidding wars. They wanted people to tell them out of the goodness of their heart and out of their interest in protecting everybody who uses the platform, because you can't compete with nation states. If North Korea says, hey, we'd like that, how are you going to compete with them? They're going to offer you millions of dollars. Apple can't do that. On the other hand, if you don't do it at all, then you get people like Linus.
It's like iTunes. Well, you offer enough where good-hearted people will take you rather than the alternatives.
And the other problem is that this is a constant refrain in all big business industries that Apple has the resources to reward people and to pay people, but they want people to do things out of the kindness of their heart. That's not correct. That's not right. that's it's if Apple were an individual, then that would be a very human thing for them to think. But to basically say, we want you to help us to protect all of our users, but we want you, we don't, not in a way that would cost us $25,000 every time someone finds this thing.
They're just not paying for macOS, which is dumb.
And in a more,
show my screen if you would, because this is the,
and a more,
in simple fashion, this is the exploit. He's written a program called KeySteal. He's demonstrating that he can unlock the passwords without him entering the passwords.
And from a more selfish perspective, it's just that you want people to be able to dedicate time to fixing your OS. Yep. You know, so by paying them, it's not a matter of goodness of their heart or not. They could always make more money with a exploit like this, selling to a government entity.
So you just want to give them something.
But giving them, allowing them, when you pay them to do it, it allows them to spend time working on it. You have a bunch of people now engaged in, I think that there might be something down here, or I have an idea, and you're not going to have all those ideas in-house. You know, and having people out of house trying to come up with them is not a bad idea. So I definitely think that Apple should be providing a bounty for these.
So,
well, yeah, they do. I mean, they totally do. They just have, for some reason, have not done it for Mac, which is perplexing.
Apparently, reason to do it. I hope he'll relent after a week and just give it to them and do the right thing.
Or they'll figure it out.
Maybe it's sufficient for them to figure it out. I don't know.
But other people could figure it out in the meantime too. Other people already have it and have been using it for years, and we don't know about it. That's what
Renee. Would you
me.
Say that then people should not use a keychain to store passwords? Use something else.
No, I mean, again, like there's always going to be errors in code. And a lot of this stuff isn't the fact that exploits exist or don't exist, but the threat level to you. And most people aren't a high level threat. Like, you know, as we saw this week, if you're Jeff Bezos, then you've got to do an incredible job of computer hygiene and best practices. But for most of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. But for
and
for
even
most of
he,
us,
by like, the way, was not invulnerable to a nation state.
No, or well, the sister's boyfriend, whatever they finally.
Well, apparently his experts at this point say it wasn't an individual hack; it was a hack from a.
And the, yeah, but the even are saying it was the boyfriend. So I mean, like, there's so many stories now.
Right.
Don't either. Like, just don't have. Yeah, don't have. Don't date
Gavin
people with
DeBecker
boyfriends
said,
or with
no,
nation
we
states.
Think it's a nation state. Yeah, yeah, but that's the point. Totally. Is once you got these nation states going up against you, you're probably all bets are.
It sounded like.
And the other thing is that you're more likely to get rolled up.
The latest story was it was the girlfriend's brother. I think is the
yeah.
But pro Trump brother. Yeah.
But we could come back to the fact that don't put anything on your phone that you don't want to have published. I mean, you know, like, and definitely don't send it to somebody. I mean, come on now. I mean,
Amazon.
It's not like he doesn't know anything about the cloud. You know, like, it's, I'm sorry.
Nobody knows anything. No, it's perplexing. But the thing I was going to say is that most people are much more likely to have, like, all of Yahoo exploited and their data is just rolled up into that because most people aren't. These are crimes of economics, and most people, it just doesn't make economical sense to go after them. But if you are, you know, concerned about this stuff, just keep an eye on it. Update it when you have to. Don't let anybody else on your computer. Don't download. It's all the same stuff we've been saying for years. Don't download apps from places you don't absolutely trust and follow those best practices. But I wouldn't shy away. Even with FaceTime, we talked about this last week. If you're deaf or, you know, you have other issues, don't shy away from it. Just be aware of what's going on and do the best you can with it.
And by the way, the teenager who did apparently discover the FaceTime bug before anybody else, Apple is going to support his education.
They bountied him, and they're giving him they're bountying the family and giving a specific donation towards his education.
Yeah, I don't think you can give a 14-year-old a $25,000 check. So
you could. It'd be awesome.
I think it's.
I can imagine if someone gave me $25,000.
Fraught with peril.
I was like, what would I have done? I mean, there's the worst part is that if he was like me, if I had someone give me $25,000, I would have. It would have been 1984, and I would have bought a new.
You
Mac.
You would have spent $50,000.
Like I would have bought a new because I had an Apple IIe.
See, that's what they should give him. Just give him every Mac, every Apple device.
I know. Like, would have been complete very happy set. With that. Yeah, exactly.
In any event, and of course, Apple's going to do better. And I believe them when they say that. I don't believe Microsoft when they say it, but I do believe Apple when they say that.
Well, their problem was that it did not go from, like, you could tell when Apple spun up internally, and it was not until the 9-to-5 article, which means that all the social media stuff and all the other stuff just did not get to anybody important. And they have to fix for that because increasingly nobody knows what channel to use. They're just going to complain on Twitter or Facebook or make a YouTube video, and they got a monitor for that.
It's just hard, though.
It's not hard.
There's an
app. I mean, I don't know what there was one that we had access to for a while that was called Radian 6 that basically it tells you your name is these keywords. These are all your products, your brand, everything else are showing up on these social networks, and they're and then it ranked them by the number of followers of that person, or and actually not the number of followers, but by their reach, right? So
I mean, so, 9to5 found it, right? I mean,
right, but I'm saying, but like, and that people. Thing was, and basically the companies that you can always tell who had Radian 6, like, when you know it, it's like United, you know that it has Radian 6 because you complain about, you say United, and you will get a response in 2 minutes, you know, because they have a crew that just sits there and watches all of those social networks across the entire bit, and it's very well filtered. There's no reason if someone posts something on social media, you should be able to react to it in less than 5 minutes, because you have to be able to for a brand, and Apple evidently not.
One thing that's very, very positive about Apple from all of this is that they have, unlike a lot of companies half their size, they have learned the lesson that there's a point at which the PR disaster becomes voluntary. There's a point a point at which you know about it. So there's a point at which you have the CEO basically post something publicly saying, "We are aware of this. Boy, we screwed up because it should have percolated up into our level one awareness, and it didn't. We're going to try to fix this. And by the way, we are working on a fix, and it will be out very, very shortly." There are other companies like Facebook that will just find more rakes to step on as they trying to move things forward. They don't see it as Apple doesn't see it as a PR problem. They see it as a problem with their hardware and software that they can fix.
Apple's lawn is a lot cleaner than everybody else's too. I think that's part of the issue is that the front yard. But the front yard is a lot cleaner.
There are a lot of like engine blocks in the backyard that the weeds have grown over.
Yeah,
landscaping.
Apple to its sometimes to its detriment is so careful about everything that they do that just aren't there isn't a whole lot of move fast break things in the company, and so there's not a lot of. There's a lot of like, let's test this forever and try to figure this out. So it doesn't mean that nothing's going to get out, obviously. But with the other companies, I think that what happens a lot of times is that when they see a string that needs to be pulled, but they're like, now if we pull this, I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen, because it's just tied to this spaghetti of everybody else experimenting. And so, writing some code and hacking through it and just making it work for today. And so I think a lot of times when you see this kind of this hesitancy by other companies to pull at that string, they just don't know what is on the other side of that string and what other strings are tied to that string to the level of that Apple does, because Apple just moves a lot slower.
Let's take a little break and more of your comments coming up in just a bit. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter. Andy Iannacco from Boston Public Radio, WGBH, IHNATKO.com.
Bingo.
And Renee Ritchie, the man in charge at iMore.com, also host of the Vector podcast. Actually, all of them have podcasts. We'll do that later. Anybody, does Spotify offer any of you guys money?
Not that I can say.
Should they? Is there Spotify money out there, Leo?
Daniel X has another $500 million, right? Or they have a $500 million.
Hello.
To spend. They've spent $230 million on Gimlet. And
I'll change my name to Gimlet if they pick me up.
we've looked deep within our souls here at Twit and decided we're not. It's not going to happen.
Not for less than $100 million.
$100 million, that might have to. Would Spotify ever want to buy us? And that's when I realized no. The answer would be no. However.
They're not that smart.
However, thank you very much, Renee. However, I do want you to right now buy ExpressVPN, the number one VPN service on TechRadar, and a great VPN service. When you want to protect your privacy, the best way to do it is with a virtual private network. Privacy is in its middle name, literally. The VPN encrypts your traffic from your computer to the VPN server somewhere out there in the world. And by the way, one of the reasons people love ExpressVPN is they've got servers everywhere. That means two things. One, it'll be faster for you no matter where you are. But two, you can also emerge into the world in many different countries. Fast and no geographic restrictions. We know you're being tracked by your internet service provider, by your cell phone carrier, by online social media sites, marketing companies. They want to know everything you do, everywhere you go. A VPN will protect you, keep your browsing history private. And because ExpressVPN has a, and you can look this up, has a great privacy policy. They do no logging. They track you in no way. They keep nothing. So even if they were subpoenaed, they wouldn't be able to tell anybody about what you're doing online. I love that. That's why you want to go to expressvpn.com/MacBreak and take your privacy back. Apps on every platform, easy to run. They go run seamlessly in the background. One click and boom, you're protected. You're private. You won't even know, by the way, you're on ExpressVPN. That's how fast they are. It will secure and anonymize your browsing by encrypting your data, hiding your public IP address. You could safely surf on public Wi-Fi. You can stop worrying about what your ISP's keeping track of. It's rated the number one VPN service on TechRadar, comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and costs less than $7 a month. Now, don't tell me you want a free VPN service, because I'll tell you what, that's a guarantee. If you get a free VPN service, they are spying on you, they are feeding you ads, they are monetizing you somehow. Not ExpressVPN, a very fair price for a really great service. Don't hand on over your online history to your internet service provider or data resellers or... what was his name? Dog the Bounty Hunter. Don't hand your data over to Dog. Protect your online activity today. Find out how you can get an extra 3 months free with a 1-year plan at expressvpn.com/MacBreak. This is the one. We've tried them all. This is the one we recommend. expressvpn.com/MacBreak. 3 months free, 1-year package, and a 30-day money-back guarantee at expressvpn.com/MacBreak. The number one most trusted VPN. So it was right at the end of the show last week that we got the press release from Apple that Angela Ahrens was leaving.
Yeah.
Have we absorbed this a little better? Do we know what's going on? I mean, there's been a lot of speculation. She spoke. She was at a Ralph Lauren's fashion show in New York on Thursday. And she said, I plan to take the summer off.
Yeah.
She declined to disclose what type of job she'd be interested in next. She says she plans to enjoy some traveling before making any new commitments. On her agenda are a mission to Rwanda and visiting two of her children in London. She said that throughout her marriage, her husband has constantly been moving with her to London, then San Francisco. Now it's time for him to get a turn. That all makes
sounds
a
like
lot
his,
of sense.
Sounds like
yeah,
his,
we
her
know
husband
there's
had
just
a
lot of
life.
Crazy people on the internet who don't want to accept it and would much rather weave fanfic about,
well,
she's responsible for the iPhone's failures.
That seems like the perfect cover story if her NDA prevents her from telling the truth about what's really going on there at the offices at Apple. Are we going to take this anymore? I don't think we're going to take this. You know, no, that's...
I can completely understand it. She's tired. She wants to rest. Now, I do think there might be a story to tell about her replacement, because this longtime Apple executive, Deirdre O'Brien, is in charge of people. She's the HR person at Apple, which doesn't... I mean, I know there's a lot of people that work in retail, but it isn't necessarily the kind of person you want leading retail. I wonder if that's a stopgap and that they are looking for somebody to go in that.
It could go either ways, because she is amazing. Like, she has been at Apple for 30 years. She helped launch the original Apple retail store, the original Apple online store, and she was VP of operations under Tim Cook for a long period of time before she took on the HR role. So she is perhaps uniquely qualified to help continue the progress, but also shore up a lot of the operational things that people feel have been sliding in Apple stores, like the day-to-day stuff, the customers, the lines, all of that. And she is really well-regarded within the company. There's a lot of retail people seem it's a huge base of retail people, but for everyone who grumbles, there's someone who's really happy about it. It might be that they get someone else for retail. Also might be they get someone else for people and just see how far Deirdre can,
yeah, that's good,
can push the stores.
So they've had mixed results. Ron Johnson?
Ron Johnson, then John Browett.
Ron Johnson was very good. He was, you know, really in charge of the big growth of the Apple stores. Then they brought in this guy's from Dixon's, which was a kind of low-end retailer in England, and he did not turn out so well.
No.
Can we say that the last 5 years under Ahrens have been, I think, very successful, yes?
She did a couple amazing things. Like before Angela Ahrens, the online and the retail were completely separate. You could not order and have it delivered to a store. And if you ordered, you could not take it back to the store, which was hugely problematic because that's the kind of expected behavior. Also, they had those huge lineups, which I'm sure marketing loved, but was really bad for customers who, you know, froze overnight and then didn't get the phone they wanted because it was sold out. And she fixed all that with the pre-order system and she got all that working. She also did all the Today at Apple launch. She worked with Lisa Jackson, all the environmental and recycling things. So I think if there are some people who made those jokes, ha ha ha, I wish I could have gotten $1 million for not doing anything for 5 years. But I think when you stack up her accomplishments, they were formidable over a short period of time.
I'd agree. I asked the panel on Twit on Sunday, and the only dissent was, man, those stores are crowded now.
no one ever goes anymore because they're too crowded.
That is a big problem. Their scale is a huge issue.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that and has been the problem for the Apple stores from day one is I don't even think about going to the Genius Bar because I just know it's going to take forever. You know,
That's the problem he was talking about was the issue that you know, you got to make an appointment, but they do have a system to do
that. But even then, it's like, oh, I got to make an appointment in like 4 days from now, or you know, my computer isn't working, and I had two iPads sit on my desk, my kids' iPads. They, of course, screwed up their passwords, and I couldn't figure out how to get it work. I finally figured it out on my own over a day because I wasn't going to take it in.
Because it was going to be so long. Yeah.
I think a lot of people have crazy schedules, and the idea of scheduling something 6 days out, you know, it's very hard for me to do. And so I...
Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle, who's the guy who had that dissent, said what they should do is spin the Genius out somehow. So that it, because the stores are crowded, and I have to say they're mostly crowded with looky-loos. I don't know if they're buying things, but that's a different operation.
But the Geniuses are crowded too.
I don't agree because I think that's a huge draw to bring people in to buy stuff. I think the Genius bars you want to have. I just think you just need to have more Geniuses, and you need to have the bars be bigger. And I think that the Apple today is genius. I think it's great. I think that you know, my kids have gone to those little classes and learned incredible amounts.
And they do have good phone support too, right? I mean, you can get phone support right away. That's very good.
Yeah, and I think building up the support so that you really feel like you can just go in.
That would be good.
You know, makes a big difference. And if you tie it to, I mean, because like even now, like Apple Care is so wonky if you don't buy it at the Apple store that, you know, I'm after like one purchase on Amazon, I was like, I'm never buying a piece of hardware for anywhere other than Apple because it's just too hard to deal with you forget and you don't have the thing and it's not automatically attached to your hardware and it's, you know, it's too much trouble. So I think that Apple has, I mean, and the stores are great. The only other thing is that, you know, that the selection is going to be crap. You know, like you're not going to see a lot of anything. You're going to see this handful of little
things. Third-party stuff?
Yeah, the third-party stuff is always like, there are so many cases. Like there's a whole wall of cases, but there's only like one of the, you know. And I will admit that I go there, I do go to the Apple store when I'm thinking about picks for MacBreak. And I look at the wall and I buy a couple things or I take pictures of them and I do some more research, you know, on them because Apple does pick very carefully. And if I feel like if it's at the Apple store, I should know about it. You know, like it's, you know, if it's some little new doodad.
That is a seal of approval, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a big deal. And I've talked to a couple people that, you know, went from nothing to a product in the Apple store. And it was like, you know. The sun came down from heaven.
It's true for podcasts. If Apple puts you in the features section on a podcast, that completely changes your life.
And I talked to a software developer that wrote a little app, and he said that they put him in one of the ads. You know, he went by in like a second, like immense. Just like his. He said, I remember making $6,000 a month to $250,000 a month in one day. Like
Apple wields a lot of power.
The Genius Bar could be a bigger problem. That they do want to make sure they solve the problem of crowding, so that I don't think it's a problem that people have to make an appointment if they get there and they're on schedule. They know that at 1 p.m. they will be seen by Genius, let's say plus or minus 5 or 10 minutes. The problem becomes when they become so overloaded that a difficulty that in the good old days might have required a full hour of attention and care and handholding is now, we got to get these numbers up. I'm just going to tell this person that this is as much as we can do for them, and you're going to have to go home now. I know the value of anecdotal stories, but the number of people who've approached me, I'm talking about people in my circle of friends and family who have had a bad experience at the Genius Bar that I thought this is weird. If they were, they either the Genius Bar was having a really off day, or this person just got their cat run over and they're in a really bad mood about all of humanity, because there's some stuff that if they had taken more time with them, they could have solved this problem, I think. So unless this person is not giving me the entire story, this just seemed like a troubling story to hear about an experience at Apple. So they just have to make sure that the level of customer care that they can deliver never goes down. If that means getting rid of all the dead products that that they are definitely not really caring about for the immediate future, to put in a couple of more Genius Bar seats, I think that's what they have to do.
And I will say that anytime I've actually talked to a Genius, it's always been great. Like,
see,
I've
I'm
always
not,
been taken
I'm
care of.
I'm hearing some people say they're not as good as they used to be.
And maybe I've just been lucky. It's probably that I'm precise. Like, I come in and I say exactly what's wrong. Like, I hear this is the issue.
Job.
This is what I tested. Yeah. So I'm able to get them to where they need to go quickly. But I've always had a great experience with them. It's just that I'm like, oh, I don't want to schedule 6 days, or I want to just go by. And
so
I think they need more people.
O'Brien, the person that can fix this?
Again, the operations side, she's really good at. She worked, Tim Cook ran a really good operations org. And if she starts looking down and going, this is the area, because they have a really good experience, but there are all these little, what Andy mentioned, all those little chips and dents in the experience. And if you can start saying, well, we're getting this many customers in this store, and the Geniuses can see this many customers, and do we need a new store here? Do we need, twice as many Geniuses?
And where do these Geniuses come from? There may be a shortage. A Genius shortage.
They're training them, but they're also like my store opens way earlier for the Geniuses. Like the store opens at 10, but the Geniuses start working at 8 now.
Oh, there
and they
you
have
go.
Like
That's
they get people in on a line.
It. That's one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
it. Yeah.
But it's scale. Like Apple used to have a Mac and an iPod when they launched those stores. And now they have such a range of products. And it's a much bigger, and so many more customers. They went from having to call people and beg them to come into WWDC to selling out in 30 seconds.
One of the other issues is that all the little mom and pops that used to sell Apple aren't there anymore because of the Apple stores. And so there is
Everything
not a lot of other places to go. You have to go to the Apple store to get something fixed, unless you're going to send it in. To have it worked on, and that's also part of the issue.
All right, so we should make a list of things we want Deidre to fix. But on the other hand, a lot of this is caused by success, and I have to say, you compare this to any other computer manufacturer
or any other retailer.
Apple
is making twice as much per square foot than the next.
But I just mean from the person,
Tiffany,
from the experience of the user.
Yeah.
There's just no question. Apple support is better than any other company. Is there? There's nobody.
Almost
even
always,
close.
There's more staff in an Apple store than I see customers in the Microsoft store.
Yeah, that's true.
And
I've never tried to bring something into Microsoft and have them fix it. So maybe they're. Maybe
there's a lot of
really
good people there. There's just not the same foot traffic at all.
No, it's not as busy, is it?
Well, because they're business to business company that sells a very limited line of products. Then you have the problem that you'd have little rugrats like I was in the 80s hanging out at the department store just to play the Nintendos and the Ataris, as opposed to I suppose you're not here to buy $600 worth of new upgraded.
That's what GameStop is for.
The other thing is, if you're listening to the show and you own if your company owns more than 5 or 10 Macs or devices, go in and ask to talk to a business rep.
We should be using the business rep. We didn't even know, and they said you need to get a business rep.
It's like frequent flyer, flyer on an airline. You really want to have a business relationship with Apple.
Yeah. If I had one other thing besides the Genius Bar thing to ask for an upgrade to the Apple stores, and I realize this is maybe an ego thing. I have had so many times where I've bought like a $2,000 laptop and I'm met at the front, say, you're here to pick up a laptop. Great. Can you have to get a receipt? Great. Just stand right here. Don't progress any further into the store. Right here near the entrance is fine. We'll bring it out to you. Say, great. Here you go. Go away. And I just when I spend $2,000 again, I realize this may not make me look like a good person. I'm just saying, for that amount of money, offer me a chair. Perhaps a cup of tea. I appreciate the fact that you're getting this to me really, really fast, and it might be a convenience thing, but it's almost like, your credit card is already processed. Now we need you to stop cluttering the aisles unless
where
you're buying another $2,000
Apple Lounge?
Thing.
Like that would. This you're is right. A you're right. We should have an apple.
This is a problem.
I'll be born in a place as they had for the gold apple.
First
watch
of all,
they should just buy a blue bottle and put it in every store.
Virtually everybody in that store is spending more than $1,000. So you got to spend more than that. Yeah, you got to buy a gold Apple watch if you really want some attention. But second, it's really a problem of scale, isn't it? I mean, they're just too successful.
I know. And I know it's a petty thing. It's just that's the only thing that was even a tiny, tiny bit negative. But every time I bought like my biannual or semi-annual MacBook, it's like, oh, well, like, I remember a time where it used to be a big deal that I was spending. It is literally the only retail store where I spend more than like $400 at a time. And it's like, oh, I guess I'm not quite the fancy lad that I imagined myself to be here at the Apple store.
It feels like you should get more. I understand what you're saying. I do.
Or a hot towel. Just present me with a hot towel for the 3 minutes while I'm waiting for the laptop to come out. Just something.
There probably are ways to address that, just, you know, faux luxury, you know.
I don't know. I think tea would be amazing.
Tea.
Like a little chair and
throw you
tea
a soda, give you an ice cream sandwich.
A blue bottle in every store.
I don't know why they don't have coffee shops in every Apple store, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, God. They already have enough problems getting people to leave that store. Imagine, like, great Apple Wi-Fi.
Services revenue.
I mean, 2 hours for the Genius, no problem. I'll have a Frappuccino.
Well, I will say that I wish that more of them look like the one that's right next to Apple Park. You know, have you been to that one?
No. Yes.
That is the quintessential Apple store. You have the big AR thing on one side, and then you have a great store, and then on the far end, you have a coffee shop. Nice. And it does seem
but you can
like
only get
like
coffee, tea, and chocolate. It's the weirdest menu.
Really, it's really good coffee.
Apple.
But like, there's no Angela Aaron's.
Around, you wouldn't even be able to get chocolate. It's too unhealthy for you.
Under Angela Ahrens, Apple has really upgraded the look of these stores all over. They're just gorgeous, right? I think that's her fashion sense came through. That if you point to one initiative that's clearly hers.
So you want to take pictures of them.
I know it a community hub.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was her goal.
I remember when they opened the one in Chicago, and I was doing some work there, and I like came around the corner, and you just see it's just an incredible view of you see that like the top of a laptop and then the glass and then the river, and it's just
especially at night
picking it and how they built it to fit into those locations, except for Sweden evidently, which is no one wants them there, except for Sweden, it's pretty good.
That temporary location they have on the Fifth Avenue store while they continue to rebuild it outside and the real one outside, and that must be killing them every single day. It's because it's not bad, but it's clearly like, here is, we were able to get the former FAO Schwartz right next door, so people will still know where to come, and it's got enough square footage so we can still do it, but the lighting is not what we want it to be. The floor is not what we want it to be. There is like a big, they've got a staircase that's like made out of steel and cement. Steel and cement staircase in an Apple store. That's got to be killing them in some way, shape, or form.
Did you watch the Grammys this year? No audio problems that I noticed.
I didn't watch the Grammys.
Yeah. I didn't
miss it.
But when I walked in the door, this was playing, and I thought, oh, good on you, Apple. This is Florida Georgia Line singing some country music in Memojis.
If Memoji app worked like that, I'd use it more.
Well, and that's the thing. If you go to the end of the ad, it says professionally animated. Do not try this at home.
If you ever wanted to imagine your favorite Grammy artist beheaded with their heads on pipes, we've got the ad for you.
Florida, watch on music. I'm waiting for the disclaimer. Oh, where was it? It's in there somewhere, isn't it? And there's Ariana Grande and Khaled.
I was thinking about it, and I think that my theory there is that they use the FaceTime or the front-facing camera to capture the animation, and then they just applied it onto there's apps now that'll do that to Cinema 4D or to Maya, and then you can do whatever you want.
Or you just hire somebody who knows what they're doing and they duplicate it, because I don't know if you could even make us an emoji that looks like that.
That's Ariana. Feels like Ariana should make an app that does this.
Yeah.
Also, why make the job harder for yourself? If you're not claiming this is a live demo anyway.
Well, and that's the point. In the ad, at some point they do disclaim.
The other thing is all these drivers, what they're, you know, they're, it's the way that the facial capture works is it's capturing it's a bunch of morph shapes, or a bunch of shapes that are, it's pushing between
It'd be interesting.
And so you could just sit there and dial them back and fix them.
It'd be interesting if they were using. I wish they would say whether they were using the front-facing camera to do this or.
I wish.
That's not to say that once they've got the wireframes and once they've got here is what the Memoji styles rigging got us. Wouldn't it be great if we there were able is. To sort of lift her left corner up a little bit more here?
Yeah. So it looks like a bunch of little sliders. It's like 30 sliders right, that are going back and forth during it, and you could easily go in there and add delta frames on top of that to kind of tune it up or delete certain ones that are glitchy or. Those are the kind of things you'd go through and just go through the keyframes.
You can't see it on the bottom of the frame, but it is there. Memoji professionally animated, whatever that means.
Yes.
It'd be nice if they said shot with an iPhone, but professionally animated.
We paid some 13-year-old in Muskegon $20. And yes, this is how good a 14-year-old high schooler can do.
Let's
with the right
see the
Apple
making
tools.
Of. How about that? The making of. Our show today brought to you by Hover. Love the Hove. Building your online brand has never been more important, and the best way to do that is have a custom URL. And I want to tell you, you go to a registrar to do that. That's the best way to do it because then there's no question. You own it. You can go somewhere else for hosting your site, whatever, but having that domain name is the best way to do it, and there is no better registrar than hover.com. And I can, it's not just me. All my domains are there, but Steve Gibson's, everybody. Buying a domain name for your passion is the first and biggest step to building your personal brand online. I gave these to my kids as I gave them their names, their domain names. If you've got a teenager, get a domain name. That's how you're going to be identified on the web forever. And the cool thing about Hover, besides the fact that it's straightforward, it's easy, there's no issue at all with upselling, you know, 500 screens. No, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. This is it. You go there, you buy your domain name. Every domain name has Whois privacy built in. And man, do they have every extension. 400 domain extensions to choose from, including .me, by the way. Leo.me, that would be good. Great for a portfolio or showcase. But lots more. .ninja, .pizza. I'm using .email for my private email server. Went to hover.com. Hover's great.
Yep.
Best-in-class customer support team, no upsells, clean and simple user experience and interface. Hover Connect makes it easy, too, to connect your domain name to any website builder with just a few simple clicks.
I moved everything there, and it's so simpler, easier.
Turn on two-factor. Yeah. It's extra secure. Yeah. Their service people, their customer support people are fantastic. They will handle your issue directly. Hover.com/twit, and you'll get 10% off the first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. 10% off your new domain for a full year when you go to hover.com/twit. I actually spent some time talking to the Hover technical guys. I don't know if you remember this. A couple of weeks ago on Twit, Greg Farrell went off talking about DNS Flag Day. And DNS Flag Day is something that the Internet Consortium has kind of promoted. And some say kind of excessively, DNSflagday.net. The idea is that they want everybody to support these new DNS extensions. And if I go to one of my Hover domains, it will pass. It'll be fine. It validates. But they'll say, but you should get more of the extensions installed. So I called Hover to ask about this. I really wanted to know what's the story there. And they said, yeah, we looked at this. And there are issues involved. And we were really concerned. Our job is to register a domain name for you. We do offer DNS, but it's an additional service that we offer as a courtesy. But if you, for instance, if you go to twit.tv, our DNS is going, even though our name is at Hover, our DNS goes through DNS Simple. And so we pass, with a green light on this one. If you go through Hover, I'm trying to remember what domains I'm using Hover's DNS for. I think this. No, that.
We're using an external DNS as well.
Yeah, almost everybody with a big bunch of traffic would, because you want to run it through so it says minor problems detected. And Greg Farrell went off on Hover for this. So I talked to him and I wanted to find out. And he said, the Hover guy said, look, there are big issues involved with doing these extensions. It's not that it's hard for us. It's not. But we decided not to do it because we don't want to break anybody's DNS. The last thing you want to do is break somebody's DNS. Mm-hmm. And
one of the things you should be aware of with these new DNS extensions, it enables DNS reflection attacks, which we've seen in the past, because you can send a massive amount of data back from a simple DNS request. So they made it. They made a technical decision. They said, we're not saying we're never going to do it, but we're not rushing to do it. If you have a hover domain name registered, it'll come up like this. The domain is going to work. That's the most important point after February 1st. But Hover has decided, and I think with good technical merit, I talked to him for quite a while, not to do the full extensions yet. They say minor problems detected on this DNS Flag Day site. I don't think that it is a problem. It's still completely compliant. In fact, it's more compliant with the existing DNS standard than these other standards, these additional standards, which are being pushed, you know, frankly, by this one particular consortium. So the ISC, that's who's pushing all this. So I know people were concerned and were worried. Greg was up in arms, I think unnecessarily, about that. I thought I'd bring that up. And as I said, use Hover. I like Hover. I'm very happy. And I was concerned, so I called them and talked to them, and they satisfied me. Did you see that the 2020 Olympics medals in Tokyo may be partially made out of old iPhones and other phones, to be fair? No bias here towards iOS.
It's gold press latinum, Leo.
I guess what happened is NTT Docomo, the big carrier in Japan, asked people to hand in old phones when they got new ones. They got 5 million disused phones.
And then figure out what to do with them. Yeah, let's make some metal.
47,000 tons of e-waste. And as you may know, your phone is loaded with precious metals, including gold. They met their target of 2,700 kilograms of bronze last June. They're 93.7% towards their goal of 30 kilograms of gold. That's a lot of gold, 30 kilograms. That's a ton of gold.
Not quite a ton.
I know where the gold is, but where's the silver and bronze inside my phones? Where's the bronze especially?
There's 4,100 kilograms of silver they extracted, so there must be bronze in there. Maybe it's in Android phones instead of gold, right? They didn't want to spend the money.
It's a bronze. It's Motorola's casing material.
They haven't quite hit their gold and silver targets, but they're getting there, and they've got all the bronze they could possibly need.
If there was aluminum metals, they would have been set years ago.
Yeah, no kidding. I think that's a great way to highlight e-waste and to recycle those phones. That's great. No word of whether they used Liam, the iPhone disassembling robot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd love to know how much the people who disassembled those phones were paid, because that recycling of e-waste has frequently been a job handed off to people with very, very, very few options and working in very, very hazardous situations for very, very little pay.
I'm reading the article now to see if they say how they did it. And it doesn't say.
We're going to get to some point in this culture where we expect a behind the scenes of everything. Like, we want to know.
Yeah.
We want to know
no
exactly.
No information should be private.
Well, especially when someone really wants us to know how wonderful they are. Well, it's like, I really like want to believe like, you.
Understanding, like, because I think we're slowly becoming.
So many times.
Well, they never did say whether they had more than one Liam or Daisy, the new one.
But it's also, you just get very, you know, like I was driving to Sacramento the other day and I'm on my way up, and there's a whole bunch of sheep, and they're all tied to posts. You know, like they're all like they all have like a long leash from like
they're
10
mowing
feet up.
The lawn.
No, that's range fed sheep. Oh. You know, like I realized when they say pasture fed, they meant the sheep are all on these little leashes that they're all like that are hanging from whatever, and they can't really go anywhere, and they're all kind of
why
like,
would they bother? Outside.
Because it's a good marketing thing. Just like when they say free range chickens, that means that the horrible place where they live has a door where the chickens can go out if they want to.
Why not just let the sheep wander around?
Because it's, I can tell you actually, it's as someone who grew up in 4-H, the more that the livestock move around, the more you have to feed them per pound.
Oh,
like that was always the thing.
Oh, they're exercising, eh?
You want them to walk around a little, but you don't want them to walk around a lot because it makes the meat tougher, and it also takes more calories. And
right.
so
they don't have as much fat.
I didn't have any sheep. I had pigs.
Sheep are more fun than pigs.
They are more fun. Well, they're a lot less dirty. I'll tell you that for
nothing. We've had sheep and goats. Don't have goats.
My cousins had sheep. And about once a year, they'd get through the fence, and then they were everywhere. And then there was
maybe that was the issue too. They don't want to escapees.
Goats, They're a lot of fun when they're little, not so much when they're older.
We've heard of patent trolls suing Apple and others. This week, Apple sued a patent troll preemptively. They filed suit against Fundamental Innovation Systems International, FISI, preemptively asking a California court to declare that Apple did not infringe upon a number of USB power patents held by FISI. Apple said that's FISI's not a real company. It's a patent assertion entity, a.k.a. patent troll, for the sole purpose of generating revenue through patent litigation. They acquired a portfolio of USB charging patents from BlackBerry, and they've already gone against LG, Samsung, and Huawei. And in fact, LG, Samsung, and Huawei are now listed as FISI licensees. Bastards.
Switch to USB-C, they said. Everything will be better if you ditch Lightning. Isn't USB-C supposed to be a standard? The whole point in using USB-C is that you don't have to put up with this nonsense.
I don't think this patent requires C because it dates back to the early 2000s. So it's just the notion that you might charge over USB. Apple has demanded a jury trial in Northern California. Normally, these patent lawsuits are in
They're not waiting for it to end up in Eastern Texas. They're pushing it.
Right.
That's a
legitimate.
It's good tactic.
Way to do it.
It's good tactic is pull them onto your.
We actually considered that when the podcast patent troll.
Right.
We've considered a number of options. Fortunately,
lead pipe.
They got destroyed by the EFF.
There you go.
Apple also add something to the lawsuit saying that this company is not allowed to use the word innovation in their title, in their common daily language. They are not allowed to have any access to the word innovation. That's one of the many things that steams me about these companies.
Yeah. That's all about anything. They bought somebody's patent.
Exactly.
I have to admit that patents should have protection for the 14 years or whatever that you have protection, but you should have to do something with it in a certain number of years after you've done the patent, or
copyright.
It protects you for the next 14 years, but you can't use it in a lawsuit after X number of years if you didn't do anything with it.
A lot of companies, though, are doing defensive patents. They're patenting stuff. In fact, Apple has
You can do that as a defensive patent, but what you can't do is sue someone for using your patent if you didn't do anything with it.
Right. So it's defensive just to protect.
You get like 5 years to do something with it. And then you, because we just, I think that a lot of it, both with patents and with copyright, right now they've turned into these kind of sewage lakes of we're just not moving anywhere. You know, they're holding up the whole industry because they're lasting too long.
I would disagree with that analogy because a sewage lake is used to purify sewage and turn it into pure drinking water.
Thank you.
Whereas patent litigators have absolutely no function.
There you go. Apple threw a bunch of interesting ideas into its HomePod patent, including the ability to make gestures.
Spells, Leo, spells. Expecto Home Patronum.
Well, you know that Harry Potter game's got to be coming pretty soon. We might all be making spells soon. Apple had an idea for a future HomePod that would offer an emoji version of Siri and LED lights that could display a variety of useful information.
Wasn't that Doctor Who this year? They just had the emoji-faced people? I think that was.
The LED could respond and change when you wave your hand in front of it using 3D gesture support. Anyway, that's another example of Apple's just going to patent everything they can think of.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of that has to do with just protecting yourself from someone else.
It's defensive. You bet.
Yeah.
TechCrunch.
And hiding the real patents. If you don't patent a million things, I know exactly what you're working on.
TechCrunch points out that Facebook and Google are not the only people abusing Apple's enterprise certificate program. Those enterprise certificates are meant for companies offering apps just for, internal use. A TechCrunch investigation discovered a dozen hardcore pornography apps, which of course Apple blocks, and a dozen real money gambling apps that escaped Apple's oversight because Apple blocks both of those. The developers passed Apple's weak, this is TechCrunch's word, enterprise certificate screening process or piggybacked on a legitimate approval, allowing them to sidestep the App Store. That's an interesting way of getting into iPhones. Of course, you'd have to sideload it.
Yeah, but that's the sort of market that would go for that. Someone who's very, very highly motivated by either money or access to porn. And I'm not making a joke there. That if you give them a freaky, freaky system for installing an app, they will still go for it.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, Safari, why bother?
Yeah.
So I would guess that the way this, by the way, to get an enterprise certificate, you fill out an online form, you pay $299 to Apple. You have to, in the form, pledge that you're building an enterprise certificate app for internal employee use only. And that
we swear on the phone. We're not going to use this for any skullduggery.
And they have the legal authority to register the business, provide a DUNS business number, and have an up-to-date Mac. So it's not so tricky. I would guess that the way it works is you'd go to a website like this Boss Room gambling app. You'd go to their website and they'd say, all right, well, if you want to install this, you have to download and install a certificate, and then you can sideload this using that certificate. That's how it works, right, Renee? You install a certificate on your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it lets you distribute it through that enterprise certificate, and you don't have to have it signed by the app store. It's signed by that company instead.
TechCrunch found thousands of sites offering downloads of sideloaded enterprise apps. Using a standard unjailbroken iPhone, TechCrunch was able to download and verify 12 pornography and 12 cash gambling apps over the past week. So this is fairly widespread.
I mean, App Store Review should just hire John Constantine and Zach Whitaker at this point.
Yeah.
Find everything.
Is this Constantine that did it, that wrote this? Or
I don't know if it was John or Zach. Yeah. One of them, yeah.
Josh has really done a lot of great enterprise work.
All those porn sites, they're like, they just ruined everything for everyone. I mean, like literally.
Yeah, no, exactly. What a nightmare for Apple to try to police all of this. And I can't imagine honest developers not getting caught in the crossfire of this. I mean, we've seen how bad things get when naughty people figure out a way around rules of commonly good behavior with what's happening with YouTube, with blackmailers figuring out that YouTube doesn't really police its strike system. They just believe that if someone says there's a copyright strike against this, they'll believe them. So we'll put two copyright strikes against this really popular YouTuber and say, unless you give us 5,000, unless you give us 10 Bitcoin, we will file a third copyright strike and you'll never get your channel back. This is the sort of problem that could affect Apple developers if Apple decides that this has now become such a big problem. We're just going to assume that one out of every three certificate users are actually fraudulent at this point, because they don't have the resources to police at all, I don't think.
Unfortunately, it looks like a lot of the certificates are actually legitimate companies who are being, or either their certs are forged or stolen. So if you see this list, you know, the certificate holder is a freight forwarding company or a U.S. furniture company, Airbnb management company in Romania, Moscow motorcycle company.
IT guy's younger brother. What is he doing?
Yeah, exactly. And Apple even kind of facilitates that because they have a DUNS lookup feature in their application. So you can look up the name of a company as a certificate.
Well, and it could be, and some of it maybe they're being tricked, but other ones are going to say, hey, we just want to do this. We want to use this number and we'll pay you
$1,000.
$1,000 a month or $1,000 a week. Yeah. And they're going to say, yeah, sure. Yeah.
I imagine after Josh's story, well done, Josh, Apple will move. Take this up. All right. That was patent time. Now rumor time.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I always say, I take this all with a huge grain of salt. Apple's next iPad mini reportedly won't look much different, but it will be faster.
Yep.
And it will still use lightning and have a headphone jack. This is from Mac Otakara and Digitimes. So... when would we see a Mac Mini? I love the Mac Mini. Would we see a Mac Mini? I'd like to see a Pro Mac Mini, to be honest with you, but I don't suppose.
Yeah, the keyboard would be hard. I mean, like the little tiny smart keyboard, that'd be fun. I want to see how
like that. Miss Meet the Robinsons.
I guess, we'll never see.
It'll be a pinky. But I mean, so I believe the idea with this is to take what's been so attractive about the 9.7-inch iPad, which is as iPad Pro prices have increased, the 9.7-inch iPad prices have gone down, even though Apple's been adding technology like Apple Pencil to them. So the iPad Mini would be a way of making an even slightly cheaper version of the 9.7-inch. It'd be 7.9-inch, but would have Apple Pencil support, and it'd be available at education and enterprise discounts, obviously, but also anybody who just wants Yeah. You know, I think Andy and I have gushed over this previously. Just wants that digital field notebook with a pen. It's like the best thing ever.
Super. I want an iPhone plus. I want this. I mean, I if we were going to see this in 2019, I would expect to see it sometime before May as some sort of an educational sort of initiative, because as great as the 9.7 inches, and it is a fantastic educational computer, having something that's more manageable and harder to drop, let's say, by kids would probably be a positive. Also, it would also follow that the smaller iPad would be structurally a lot more solid just by virtue of the fact that it's a smaller pane of glass. You have a higher ratio of aluminum to create the structural supports of it. But I think that if Apple has any intention of making this mostly for the educational market, a lot of us are going to be knocking on our neighbor's door. Can I borrow Justin for an afternoon? I need to take him to a mall so that Apple will sell me an quote educational mini iPad that I absolutely desperately want. I will buy him a new pair of shoes, whatever you put on the shopping list for okay, not Sears, but maybe Macy's. I will buy it. It's such a great idea.
And of course, one of the subjects that will be there'll be lots of speculation about until next September, whether the 2019 iPhone will use Lightning or USB-C. I'm rooting for USB-C, but here's the rumor that the next iPhone, according to, again, Mac Otakara, will use Lightning and the same crappy 5-watt charger and USB-A to Lightning cable in the box.
I have the best troll for Apple. If I was Apple, I would come out and say, we're not going to USB-C, but we're deleting the Lightning port, and then let everybody gasp and then say, but we're putting the 3.5-millimeter headphone jack back.
That would be a massive troll.
We're giving you a 1/4-inch stereo headphone jack. Wow. So you can use your dad's headphones on this new iPhone.
And it'll use the old shuffle charger. Like you got the old
I have to admit, you know, I was so... When they took away the headphone jack, I was so apoplectic, and I was just like, I'm never going to go to Bluetooth. And now I have my AirPods, and I have to admit that I do have some Edimotics that I wear occasionally when my AirPods run out of battery. And it's so funny how now I've gotten to this point where, like, this thing, this the headphone, the line is getting caught on everything, and I forgot. You know, like, it's just like this thing that I now have to deal with that I never thought I would ever give up. You know, okay. I wear my wire, and now my wire is getting caught on everything.
I got up and walked away, and my phone flew across the room the other day. It was very embarrassing because I didn't remember that I was wearing earpods instead of AirPods.
Like, I'm sorting things. I'm so used to just setting my iPhone somewhere in the room, and then I just go about and doing what I'm doing. And then the phone rings, and I can't figure out where my phone is. Like, I'm wandering around trying to find it.
I won't have this argument again. I'm just saying that I like wired headphones. You plug them in, and the electrons know exactly where to go. At no point do you say, gee, I wonder why I'm not listening to, I'm not hearing it through my earphones. Why don't I just go through a whole bunch of menus to tell it that the earphones that I'm using that are 2 feet away from the phone are the actual things I actually want to listen through. Again, if you draw a line in copper from point A to point B, there's no questions for the electrons to ask. Oh, I know. I follow the copper trail road, and it works. That's all I'm saying.
If we do, maybe a bellwether, this would be the new AirPods. If they come out with new AirPods in the spring, would they have a Lightning connector or a USB-C connector? If they have a Lightning connector, then I think we'd have to be that the iPhone coming out shortly after that would have to be Lightning, right?
No, because they crazy Ivan all the time, Leo. It's like you get an iPad Pro that has USB-C, and then you think, oh, they're definitely going to do the iPhone. And then, like, the Apple TV has USB-C, but then they get rid of it the next year. It's just I think there's a whole department that just wants to keep us off balance.
Well, I think there's also licensing issues and control issues that, you know, the iPhone is a much bigger product for Apple than the iPad is. So right. You can put a USB-C in the iPad, and it doesn't matter as
That's
much.
A good
well,
point.
Well, Mike, I think also intimated that they had all this stuff that they were ready to go with Lightning, and just the cost of transitioning all of that to USB-C at iPhone scale was going to take a while or be really expensive, because you have to replace every headphone, every, you know, the plug in the phone, also the adapter, all of those things. And when you make 100 million of them, that's a little bit of cash.
Now, for this next story, we go to our opera expert, Andy Inatko. I had no idea, but apparently the Santa Fe Opera did an opera called The Revolution of Steve Jobs. R is in parentheses, so it's like revolution, evolution. Look at this picture from it. It's a one-act opera, and it won a Grammy Award for Best Opera Recording. Have you seen this opera, Andy? Do you know of it?
I haven't seen it, but the cast, it's a Grammy, so the cast recording is out, and I've heard it. It's okay. It's I was actually hoping for another candidate to win an opera called Great Scott, which was another brand new opera that was only written couple of years ago. But it's the recording that gets the nomination. So the recording actually landed late last year because I could understand if they're more conservative, because Steve Jobs is more of a serious sort of dramatic opera, whereas Great Scott is kind of like a screwball MGM musical written as an opera. The plot line of Great Scott is that a international opera diva comes back to her hometown to do like a benefit show of a benefit production of a rediscovered fake opera for the regional opera company, and hijinks ensue. And it's actually it's one of those rare things you call a funny opera. It's also Joyce DiDonato as the returning diva who has her own issues. It's pretty funny.
It's Revolution of Steve Jobs, Scene 1. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, see, it's...
cover and not much time. Now is a fine place to start.
Okay, I like opera, but I kind of like it to be in French or Italian.
It's hard for us to get into it because we can't. This is totally not Steve Jobs.
Oh, nice. Thanks for coming.
Well, the funny thing is, as an American, you're not exposed to. You, part of opera is listening to something you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know,
I don't want to hear the English. My mom and dad always used to make fun of these kinds of.
Where's the magic flute?
Here's one called Karma Can Suck.
There's not a high order bit, I'm going to be sad.
I find understanding the words very distracting.
With respect, simplify doesn't mean be selfish.
You're not wrong.
Simplify doesn't mean be selfish.
That's the wrong language.
The rounded circle is here.
This is crap. This is crap.
This is called.
You should all be ashamed.
One button.
Of yourselves.
This is called One Button. Turn it on. I shouldn't make fun of this. Plus, this is going to.
Turn it on. And you're off. Simple, clear cut, uncluttered, and clean.
I want to see this now. So if you,
it's not really a notebook at all. It's something quite else, something quite different.
Santa Fe Opera Orchestra. It is available on, I'm sure, Apple Music. I'm playing it off Google Music, but there you go. And available in record stores now. If you had a record store, you could probably get it.
Hey Spotify, if you bought us, this is exactly this type of on-the-spot, hip, current with the kids today promotion you'd be getting each and every day, drive time to midnight, with the breakfast flakes.
And finally, Pokemon Go. I had to do a story for Pokemon Go.
Yes.
By the way, I want to say I am 38. The lovely Lisa's 39. We're closing in on... Mr. 40, which is the top level you get in Pokemon Go.
I think Lisa and I are almost... Leo and I are best friends now, but I think Lisa and I are also almost best friends.
That's the secret. Get the best friends, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I made it to 3.
It'll level up fast.
You made it to level 3?
Yeah.
I'm just going to give out, in case I have deleted anybody that isn't playing hard, including Anthony Nielsen. So if you play hard and you want to be my friend, there's my trainer code, 3068-5802-0079. I'm the guy... in the Pikachu hoodie. Just saying.
And what I notice people doing, Leo, is that they will put up that code and then they'll hit that little recycle button and get a new code after a while. So if you want, you can like open it up for a day, then hit the recycle button, get a new code, and tell another group of people the next week. And it helps if you have like a high volume of people, you know, are going to sign up and you don't want to swamp it all at once.
Okay. Okay. But don't befriend me unless you're really going to play, because this is the secret we realized to getting to 40.
Yeah.
Is putting down a lucky... I'm sorry to bore you with this. Putting down a lucky egg and then adding the friendship level and getting it up and up and up.
See, back in my day, you had to catch a billion Pidgeys and then put on a lucky egg and evolve them. And now Pidgeys. You kids.
Yeah, you kids. Easy for you kids. The other day I got 500,000 points. Two best friends and an ultra friend with a lucky egg. I was a happy man.
Boom.
Boom. Like that.
Yeah. This is all way too complicated for me.
Well, then you may like this vastly improved AR photo mode that's coming to Pokemon Go very soon. How is this different? I don't use the AR mode because it was
very limited before. Like, you could only look at the AR mode when you were catching a Pokemon, and a lot of people just wanted to be able to take funny like, I want to take a funny photo with a duck on Leo's head, ha ha ha. But if you don't have anything to catch, like, you can't do anything, and you're trying to catch it, so it's not in the right place. So I think the goal of this is just to let you have, like, all the little Pokemon you have and put them in the real world so you can take cool photos of them.
Oh, okay. That's cool. By the way, now that I'm looking at this Pokemon, maybe Pikachu does have fur. I don't know.
It's the Detective Pikachu trailer all over again.
Yeah, that was the big
debate. There's something amazing about Deadpool's voice coming from a Pikachu that I'm just going to let the internet deal with for all.
This is really weird.
I will electrocute you with my tail.
Lisa and I, once we get to 40, we're just going to retire. And,
perfect.
And enjoy the... enjoy the weather.
Just 40, drop the 40 phone, and, not hard.
40 and what number base? Base 10, base 8.
I believe it's
base 40, 12. Turns out.
Base, yeah. You have to get a lot of points to get there. It's not easy. Yeah. And if we're evolving Pikachu one by one, it would not be fun.
No, it was not fun. We call it the grind, Leo. It was called the grind.
The grind, yeah. Baby. All right, let's take a little time out. Gentlemen, prepare your picks. I could tell you my pick. It's right out of the box, baby. For the last 10 years, it's been my pick. The first app I install on any new device, LastPass. It's my password manager. It should be your password manager. LastPass keeps you safe, prevents breaches by using a different password on every site. A password LastPass generates is long, strong, random, and truly unmemorable. But wait, you say, I need to remember it. No, you don't. With LastPass, you just remember the LastPass unlock code, the vault password, and everything else is stored in there. LastPass is totally secure. It has a zero-knowledge security model because data is encrypted and decrypted only at the device level. Nobody, not even LastPass, can get your passwords, just you. And I really like that. The reason I install it first on every device, well, on the iPhone and Android devices, it auto-fills. So I just, set up a new Android device. I put LastPass on there, set it up, and now whenever I get a new app or want to put a new app on there, it just logs me in. It's so nice. iOS 12 does that too. I just think that's fantastic. Now, that's just the pitch for LastPass at home. It's even more important in your business, and that's because your employees suck. No, they don't. They're wonderful, lovely people, but they don't know from passwords and Post-it notes. They are going to, and boy, the last thing you want is the name of your company to be featured as a headline in the next Wall Street Journal article about breaches. LastPass protects you by asserting strong password policies at work. You can even make it that the employees don't even get passwords. They just get automatic logins. You can make it easy to share passwords with password vaults. You can actually set over 100 password policies. Things like master password requirements, require two-factor. That's what we do. We use LastPass Enterprise. We love LastPass Enterprise. I've been using LastPass for 10 years, and we started using LastPass Enterprise when one of our employees posted all his passwords on a public web page. And we said, oh boy, we need a better way to do this. And of course, you can restrict access if you have to. I trust it so much, I store everything. If we, as a company, store everything in there, including database logins, SSH keys, software licenses, all the business information. I store my social security number, my passport, my driver's license in LastPass. It's that safe. It's that secure. And it's nice because you have it on every platform, Mac, Windows, Android, iOS, even Linux. My passwords are always there in every browser, every time. LastPass. Don't forget their authenticator app, which makes it very easy for your employees to add two-factor. They just get an approve deny button. That's really nice. It works with Microsoft Active Directory. So if you're an AD house, you can use Active Directory credentials to log into LastPass. That makes it even easier. You're going to love LastPass. You need LastPass. If you've been thinking about it, do not delay. Go right now to lastpass.com/twit. There's LastPass for personal use, that's LastPass Premium. LastPass Families, that's what we use at home. If you have a small team, 50 or fewer, LastPass Teams. And the big boy, we use it, LastPass Enterprise. 43,000 businesses, 16.5 million people trust their most precious possession, their passwords, to LastPass. LastPass.com/twit. I'm happy to use it, happy to recommend it.
I think that the most useful part of we've been using LastPass for ever.
Well, you have people come and go, so you really have to.
Oh, and the big thing is that we the biggest thing is when we
volunteers,
when we want to give someone access to something, being able to not give them the password and just give them an access so they can just log in and just automatically puts it in for them. But I don't have to propagate passwords because we have to manage a lot of passwords securely, and it's just way easier not to have to.
And you've got things like the door code of the White House. You don't want that to be leaking.
Definitely keep it in LastPass. That's key.
Andy Inoko, pick of the week.
My pick of the week is something cool but kind of odd. I was on AliExpress a few weeks ago, and I saw exactly how cheap you could have like really huge photo prints on canvas made.
Ooh.
I'm going to back up a little bit.
Ooh, I like that.
So this print is full color off of like a really professional, I don't know whether it's a Canon or an Epson printer. It is a print that's about like a meter wide by 2 feet high. And it costs all of $16.
Wow.
And $16 is printed on canvas. This was just an image like I happen to have. Like, this is based on a JPEG, as a matter of fact, that I just downloaded off of Flickr for my Flickr library. It was so cheap for such a big print. I have been looking at different ways to get like really, really big prints made for a long, long time. If you buy from like local, like United States companies, it's so expensive that it's just not worth the cost for me. And so when I saw $16, I decided this is probably going to be terrible. It's probably going to take like 3 months. But for $16, I'll at the very least, I'll be able to get a column out of it or a pick of the week out of it. It's actually really, really very good. I'm going to try this again. As a matter of fact. I'm just recommending go to AliExpress and search for canvas photo print, because I can't say that after experiment with one company, this company's, oh, they're the best. You should absolutely do it. Also, because different companies have different print sizes, maximum available, also different treatments. You can have it. This is just raw canvas. I'll build a stretcher for, and I'll hang somewhere in my house. But you can also have it like already on a stretcher. You can have it on like two horizontal bars. You can sort of roll it up like a scroll and it will lay flat. I ordered it on like a Monday, and by Tuesday night I got a notification that it had been printed and it was ready to ship out. And about 2 weeks later, 2.5 weeks later, it arrived with full tracking. And like I said, for $16, it's almost cheap enough that you can use it for pranks. Like find a really embarrassing photo of somebody and make it like 8 feet by 6 feet and just leave it on the side of their house overnight when they're coming back from vacation, so that their most embarrassing Instagram is right there for all the neighbors to see. I definitely recommend people try it out. Like I said, for just 2-3 weeks for next to nothing, it's a really good deal. I will say that it's also inspired me to engage in a couple of art thefts that have already happened. Like I've been to a museum in the Boston area, taking pictures with my camera, my good camera with a good zoom lens, like taking about 40 zoom high detail pictures of each one, stitched them together into like a 16,000 pixel by like 8,000 pixel Photoshop, and with the full intent of having a full size, highly detailed copy of this artwork on my wall. And that's the sort of larceny you can get away with when canvas prints are available this cheap.
I do notice. So did yours come from China?
Shipped all the way from China.
So I do notice that the ones I've clicked on, almost all of them say estimated delivery time 42 days. That's all. That's just like so they don't get in trouble, right? It didn't take that long.
Mine said something like 4 to 6 weeks. I was expecting to wait that long, but again, 24 hours later, it was printed and in a reasonable amount of time for something to be shipped from China. I've bought things from China before, and it's about just 2 or 3 weeks. So
yeah, my mail lady is starting to get suspicious because I get so much
stuff from China. But and I got tea from Japan. It's real at this point. It's so easy to ship stuff globally.
Yeah, especially when you get like when you're about to buy like NeoPixels like for an Arduino project or a Raspberry Pi project, and you see how much they cost like locally, then you realize that for the amount I was about to spend for 10 like RGB super bright like program addressable pixels, I could get literally a bag of 500 if I'm willing to wait 3 weeks to get it from China. And I'm like, oh, I know. It was built there anyway. It's not as though like I'm taking jobs away from NeoPixel manufacturers here in the United States of America.
I'd be careful about buying Chinese condoms, though. Apparently, that's the featured fabulous.
No.
AlixPress.com.
Yeah. I'll say one final thing. If you're about to like buy something that it's often a good idea, like if you're going on Kickstarter or on eBay or something and say, wow, that's a really good deal for an iPad stand, or wow, what an innovative idea for a keyboard. Say, I'm just going to go on to AliExpress and do a Google search for that sort of thing. And oh, this Kickstarter that they're charging $45 for is actually $50 per book of 20 directly from a Chinese manufacturer.
It's an
interesting resource because all this stuff is practically directly from the manufacturer themselves. You can buy, I'm tempted to get the Oscar statue. Every time I'm on AliExpress, I'm like, what are the chances it's a perfect, as photographed, it's a perfect replica of the Oscar statuette, versus what are the chances that it's too small or it's actually that little dude holding like a laurel branch that's clearly not the Oscar statuette. But it's like, I would love to have an Oscar, and I'm certainly not going to earn one on my merits.
Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I've got two quick picks this week. One is, I don't know if we actually said it on the show or not, but Amazon is buying Eero. And some people love that because they assume Eero Plus is going to just get melted right into Amazon Prime and they'll get twice the service for the same amount of money. Other people don't want a router that's owned by any big internet company, be it Google or Amazon. And they're sort of, you know, either they're looking for something else or they're changing their view. And they've been asking, I think, overnight, over and over again, what else people can get. And one thing people might not be aware of is one of the big sells for Eero is that it was created by Apple engineers, but Ubiquiti, which makes Amplify for the home, Ubiquiti for the office, was also created by one of Apple's very first internet architects. And he had this vision for sort of mesh wireless and for systems way beyond that Apple just wasn't interested at the time. So he left and he made Ubiquiti. So if you're not up with Google, Amazon gives you any hesitation whatsoever, Ubiquiti is a really good thing to look at. And the second one is... Sorry, I just lost my place there for a second.
Keychron.
Keychron. And this is entirely for Andy. So this is a Kickstarter. And what it does is it brings you the thinness of an Apple keyboard, but with actual, like, I don't know if they're cherry or not. I think they might be, but actual clickety-clackety mechanical switchers for you to tactily enjoy while you're typing on it. And I just saw it and I immediately thought of Andy. And I thought I had to bring it up on the show.
I'm on AliExpress to see if it's actually. You're good. I don't see it.
Nice. It's a Keychron and keychron.com.
Yeah, and it looks badass. I mean, it looks like a really, really cool keyboard.
Yeah, well, because they stick up above the back. That's kind of cool. Yeah.
They have this thing called Travel that I hear some of you like.
Travel. What is that? Alex Lindsay, pick of the week.
And by the way, we use the amplifier at the house, and it's quite nice. Good. Yeah, that's what I cover my whole house with. And what's great is being able to set up all the guest codes and everything else so that it's very easy to just kind of set things up. So when people come in, you're not giving them your password. You're just giving them the guest password. And
this week, we talked on Security Now about security vulnerabilities in the Ubiquiti firmware. So something to be aware of.
It updates a lot.
Yeah, and that's actually
it's good, and it does ask. It does ask. You just look over. It's sitting right next to my Mac, and so the little head unit sits next to my Mac. I just glance over, and I'm like, am I ready to give up my internet for about 5 minutes? And I just push the button on the front, and it just updates. You know, so it is nice that it's so easy to update.
Just turn off. I think it's port broadcasting. It's about 500,000 Ubiquiti devices are subject to this. And I listen to Steve, but I seem to remember if you disable
the broadcast ports, or there's no reason why you should have UDP ports 10,001 to 48,500 open. So anyway, something to be, or I guess that's the number of devices available.
They also make great antennas that go like 10 miles, just in case you're wondering. I have a pair of those too.
Ubiquity is great. We use them for a long time here, and enterprise stuff. I think we're using Ruckus right now, but those enterprise networks are fantastic.
Yeah.
So Ubiquity has yet to patch this device, this issue with some of its devices. Mass exploitation attacks were first spotted last week. Threat actors use a service running on port 10,001 on Ubiquity devices to carry out weak DDoS amplification attacks. So basically, you should just go to Shields Up, make sure port 10,001 is not open.
There you go.
I think
good tip. Thanks, Leo. I didn't heard that one.
Yeah, you got to keep up on this stuff all the time, right?
Oh, we have
and
Steve.
I'm sure Ubiquity will patch it, but that's a significant.
We do have Steve.
Yeah, we do have Steve.
Thank goodness for Steve.
Everybody listens to Steve. So, all right, now it's your turn, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
So I've been getting back into coding and getting my kids into coding, they're 9 and 11. It's about the time I started coding, so I feel
it's
like
so much fun.
And I was just looking for some good videos that are easy to follow but an actual like course load that you can kind of work through. And I found Code with Chris on YouTube, and there's something about how he's put together the curriculum that I think is just really works well. So it's a mixture of being personal but also being to the point. You know, I have a little ADD, so I need to move quickly, and I admit that I still watch the videos at 2x. But it really takes you through, okay, we're going to show you how to build something basic, then you're going to build something with a database, then you're going to build something that needs a design. And so those, you know, you kind of work through these courses.
And they're iOS apps.
It's how to, like, you can basically learn how to program Swift from...
Nice.
Because I'm interested in just Swift. I'm not interested in trying to figure out anything else. And so I just want to learn, that's the part that I'm trying to learn right now, is I just want to just learn Swift. And so this will let you, if you are interested, it's relatively inexpensive. I think it's $200. Relatively inexpensive, and if you're trying to figure out how you're going to get off the ground and build something and in a month be able to actually, because I think that's the hardest part, is getting over the hump of I just don't understand how to compile an Xcode, I don't understand how to do the basic building, and then after that there's lots of resources that you can go through, but getting over that initial hump I think is really important. And I've been researching this a lot, and these are the best set of videos that I've found so far. And again, you can see a bunch of them for free on YouTube, so you don't have to buy anything until you know on YouTube. You can search for Code with Chris, you can watch a bunch of his videos, but the courses are even better.
Nice. Very cool.
I know we all want to write apps. We all have ideas.
I'm looking forward to Bella's first iOS app. That'll be fun.
Well, she's really into photography, so I'm working on teaching her how to build her own photo app. You know, just a simple one that she has the buttons and she can kind of put it together, because it's something that she'll figure out what she wants to do from there. And, you know, I think Malachi will probably build a game.
This is cool.
So, nice. Wow.
Very impressive. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Andy. And thank you all for watching. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be 1800 UTC if you want to stop by. Watch at twit.tv/live or listen, because we have audio and video streams there. If you're doing that, join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. They're also watching live. Or join us in our studio. We have a nice studio audience today. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure we got a chair out there for you. You can also find copies of all of our shows at our website, twit.tv/MBW. Or, you know, fire up Spotify, and if you can find us, subscribe. It's not easy.
No, that's their problem.
Yes, kind of the
problem. Hopefully after they bought
I'm sure Gimlet will fix that.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Stitcher, Slacker, but any app you use. Pocket Cast is very popular. iTunes, of course. Make sure you subscribe, though, so you get every episode the minute it's available. Of a Tuesday afternoon. Renee Ritchie is at imore.com. That's where he does the Vector podcast as well, imore.com/vector. He's at Renee Ritchie on Twitter. Anything you want to plug?
No, I just put up the Amazon Eero video, so I have that there. And I've got one on iMessage for Android going up tomorrow, because that's always a topic the kids love, Leo.
Thank you. Great to have you, Renee. Alex Lindsay is at the Pixel Core. Follow him at Alex Lindsay on Twitter, LINDSAY. Anything coming up that you want to?
I am. No, I don't really have anything.
No, nothing at all. Nothing.
No.
Nope.
Just the show. I'm here next week.
Yep. Are you here next week?
I think so.
We'll look for you. Yeah. Andy Iannocco, you'll hear him every week on WGBH Boston, Boston Public Radio. You find him on Twitter, IHNATKO, and on iannocco.com. Anything you have coming up you want to mention?
Next radio is Friday from 12:30-ish to 1-ish. It's once again at the Boston Public Library studio. So if you're going to be in the Back Bay of Boston and you want to get a coffee and a cookie and watch me absolutely not reading from notes, taking everything from memory, spontaneous, that's how my mind works. I'm just keeping the iPad in front of me just for window decoration.
What day is
come
this?
Come on over.
Friday.
You
can be in Boston? Next Friday?
Yeah, this Friday, but I'll be in Boston next Friday as well.
Mm-hmm. I might be on the East Coast next Friday.
I
might be able to move closer to you and stuff like that. Anyway, but yes, or you can stream it live at WGBHnews.org or see it later at WGBHnews.org.
Thank you all. Don't forget, we're doing the TWIT survey, twit.to/survey2019. We do this every year, once a year, just to get an idea of who's listening and what you're interested in. The last question of the survey asks, you know, what shows would you like to see? And we'd love to hear from you about that. twit.to/survey19. It's our 2019 survey.
You can use me as a write-in candidate to say we just want more Alex shows.
More Alex. We do appreciate you doing that. We do not collect any personal information about you in that survey. We don't care. We don't want to know. We just want to know in an aggregate. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. But now I'm afraid you must get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.